You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're so delighted that you've joined us again this week, whether you are listening live tonight on the LA Talk Facebook page live, we say hello, or whether you're listening to the audio, or you're catching this somewhere down the trail. We are so delighted that you're here.
We are.
The music that kicked us off was Hot Texas, provided by our good friend Alex Dormont and his Hot Texas Swing Band. And Jim, where are we going to be coming up?
We're going to be live in Old Town, New Hall, California for the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival. Well, that's on April 22nd and 23rd. Come out to the Buckaroo Bookshop, which we are hosting, and chat with us. And we're going to have about 14 authors. And here are just a few of them. We have Bob Brill.
Bob Brill, the Lancer series and other books. Go ahead. I'm ready. Go ahead.
Next, we have E. Joe Brown.
E. Joe Brown, and he has been a guest on the show. In fact, Bob Brill will be joining us June 1st, but E. Joe Brown, A Cowboy's Destiny.
Next, Susan Campo.
Oh, Susan Campo's right here. I thought I had my alphabetical order correctly. Here we go. Susan Campo will be with us Sunday, April 23rd. She writes amazing nonfiction. This is a biography of Warren Oates, Wildlife.
Yeah, he's quite a guy.
Yeah, he's quite a guy.
Next, Mark Jackson.
Mark Jackson. Uh-oh, I didn't bring Mark Jackson's book out. Uh-oh. Okay, well, we'll have Mark Jackson's book handy next week.
We're gonna try Courtney Joyner.
Courtney Joyner, absolutely. So Courtney is oh my goodness, he's a writer, he's a screenwriter, he's an expert on Western film and horror films, and just a phenomenal guy. He's also going to be a moderator for a panel, which I'll talk about in a minute. One of the anthologies that he's involved in is Six Guns and Sleigh Bells, A Creepy Cowboy Christmas, one of my favorite Christmas books. And then he has a series. He's written a lot more than we have here. The Shotgun series. For those of you that are a little bit into sort of steampunk, Shotgun has a major injury in the Civil War, and he gets a very special shotgun made to actually fit his arm. Very cool. Very cool series. Okay, who do we have next?
Andrea Kidd.
Oh, Andrea Kidd, our good friend Andrea. She is a cowgirl poet and a world-class equestrian, and she's got two CDs, and she's going to be with us, and she's just a kick. You will love her. If you walk in the booth and you see a big smile, that's Andrea Kidd.
Next, J.R. Sanders.
J.R. Sanders has been with us, I think, almost since the very first year, 2009. Yeah. He wrote a fabulous nonfiction book, Some Gave All, Forgotten Old West Lawmen Who Died With Their Boots On. And he has started a series. This is the first in the series, and book two is out, and book three is on the way. Stardust Trail, a Nate Ross novel, and it actually takes place in Hollywood and in the movie sets of the B Westerns. It's a really, really fun book. That's J.R. Sanders. And
okay, next we have Bill Wilbur.
Bill Wilbur. Bill's been with us also many times, author of many books. This is Saragossa, and newly revised and expanded, and we're just delighted to have Bill back with us again. And that's all the books that I'm so sorry, Mark, that somehow I was looking for the books late last night in the dark with a flashlight. And somehow I missed you.
In the dark with a flashlight?
Yeah, because you were sleeping. let's see.
Okay, well, next, what else is going to go on there?
Well, we have this. I actually have to sort of read some notes. So the Buckaroo Bookshop is a 10 by 30 booth tent that will be on Main Street in Old Town New Hall. That's where all the action is happening. They're blocking the street off and putting up booths and stages, and it's just going to be a lot of activity. But just down at the end of the street, at the intersection of Main Street and Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, is the Old Town New Hall Library. And we're partnering with them. Rendezvous with a Writer is partnering with the Friends of the Santa Clarita Library. They have reserved their community room for us, and they are very excited about what we're doing. So we will have live presentations starting at 11 o'clock on Saturday and on Sunday, ending at 3:40. Every hour on the hour is a new 40-minute presentation. Andrea Kidd, that I just mentioned, is going to have one. Bob Brill is going to have one. E.J.O. Brown is going to have one. And we have two panel discussions, New Westerns and Their Future. That's on Sunday. And Courtney Joyner will lead that with the question, what lies ahead for the Western genre on paper and on screen? Why is the Western still relevant, or is it? And what challenges do Western writers, screenwriters, and filmmakers face today? That's on Sunday. On Saturday at 2 o'clock, our good friend Katie Ryan is leading a panel. And don't tell me that I don't have my notes here. Hold on. Do you have the notes right there? Katie Ryan is leading a panel called Tricks of the Trade. Tricks of the Trade. And she is going to be talking about the stories behind the books that get written. She has moderating a panel of three authors, and they're going to talk about sort of where inspiration comes from and how do they tell their story and give some tips for writers. And that will be Saturday at 2 o'clock. And then what's happening on the street? What other things are happening, Jim?
Well, we got cowboy, country, folk, bluegrass, music across three stages and entertainment. That includes Western swing and country line dancing, trick ropers, living history, activities for all ages. Wow. We have Western vendors and the best ever Dutch oven peach cobbler.
Come for the cobbler.
Very good.
Stay the music book.
Cobbler, right?
The whole event is everything happening on Main Library is free. Can check out the festival website. Just Google Santa Clarita Cowboy Fest. And we're just delighted to have taken a moment to share this with you. It's coming up, and each week between now and then, we'll be talking a little bit more about the festival and our authors.
We will.
So who's joining us now?
Mary Camarillo.
Hi.
Here she is. Oh, hello. Hi. We're so delighted to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. All those books sound so good. I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
We have a little bio here. Now, Mary will fill us in on more things.
Yeah.
But just to get us started, Mary's a multiple winning, award-winning debut novel, The Lockhart Women, was published in June of last year, or 2021, excuse me. By She Writes Press. Mary writes about Southern California, a place that she's called home for more than 50 years, but still is adjusting. I can understand that.
Yeah, we never could figure it out.
Her poems and short fiction have appeared in publications such as 166 Palms, Sonora Review, Lunch Ticket, and The Year. Her second novel will be published in October of this year. She lives in Huntington Beach, California, with her husband, and Riley, the terrorist cat. We have to talk about that one.
We need to ask about. We didn't talk about him the other night. And this, of course, is the cover of The Lockhart Women by our special guest, Mary Camarillo. So, Mary, would you share with our audience a little bit more about your background and how you got started writing?
Sure. Well, I'm very happy to be here. So thank you so much for including me. I was one of those typical kids that went to the library and checked out all the books that you were allowed to check out and took them home and read them and then went back the next day for more. I'm still reading voraciously. When I was in high school, I started writing poetry and I edited the literary magazine for Fountain Valley High School. I thought I was going to major in journalism, but unfortunately and sadly, really, I let a sour teacher kind of dissuade me from that idea. So, you know, it's 1969. I think I'm going to start an underground newspaper instead.
Cool.
But the principal got wind of it and was not pleased.
Called
my parents into the office and said, you know, if this newspaper comes out, your daughter's going to get expelled. And then they noticed that I had enough units to graduate early. So that's what I did.
Very good.
And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do in college. So I went to work and I saved money and saved enough money to go to Europe for 3 months with a backpack and drill pads.
Great.
That was a great experience. And I came home and I got a job at the post office.
Hmm. Did you travel alone on that trip to Europe?
I did go by myself.
Wow.
Two of my girlfriends were supposed to go with me, but they never
chickened out.
They kind of chickened out. So. Yeah. It was a great experience. But in those days, there were a lot of college kids traveling.
I thought so. Yeah.
So I, you know, I had to keep my wits about me, but I never really felt like it was not a safe thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really lucky. I couldn't do it now. I don't want to sleep in hostels.
Right.
I like nice hotels.
Well, yeah, when young, you can sleep on the floor. So it's
yeah. The book we're talking about tonight, I'm going to hold it up again, The Lockhart Women. This was engaging, all of the readers listening out there, very engaging from page one. It will grab you. Mm-hmm. And if you recall living at all in the 1990s, early 90s, even if you were not in the Los Angeles area, there is a backstory happening throughout this whole book that you will feel very familiar with. I know we both, we were both grabbed, you know, right away in the beginning. And then as often happens, one of us would read a little further than the other one, and then the other one would catch up. And then we would, you know, have dinner and we would be talking about where we were in the book. And there are certainly things that happen we want to try not to share with our listeners tonight, because there are great surprises and we want you to engage and find them out for yourself. So Mary, tell us a little bit about, maybe first, what inspired this story? How'd it come to you?
Well, because I've been such a great reader all my life, I wanted to write something that I hadn't read before. And I really hadn't read too many books that were set in Southern California that were about real people. Most books about Southern California are about people that are connected to the film industry, or they're musicians, or they're big tech guys. They have a lot of money. They're not the people that I know. I know people that work at the post office and shop at Target and think that maybe the Olive Garden's a pretty good place to go out for dinner, you know? So I wanted to write about those kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then because I had worked at the post office for so long, I always knew there were stories there. I mean, there was all these different cultures and age groups working really weird hours and having, you know, terrible days off. It gets to be a really insular kind of family situation where the only people you hang out with are the people you work with. So then these, you know, unfortunate romances start sometimes, and just a lot of drama. So I always knew there was a lot of stories there.
Did you enjoy your time at the post office for the most part?
Pretty much I did. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty mindless work when I first started, you know, just sorting mail. But that was a period of time where there were a lot of laid off teachers that were working for the post office.
Oh.
And there was, I mean, I came from a pretty generic neighborhood. I had never worked with people of different cultures. And all of a sudden I'm exposed to all these people that are older than me and have all these stories. Yeah. So, you know, you sort mail and you tell each other about your lives. And I found that really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I made a lot of really good friends. I met my husband there. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The other great thing I really enjoyed is after a while, you get 5 weeks of vacation.
Where do you get that? And you really get it. I mean,
and I love to travel, so that was a big incentive. And then I realized there was a lot of different things to do at the post office. I mean, I eventually got a day job and went back to school and got my business degree, started working in the accounting office, started supervising the accounting office. Then I ended up managing an accounting office in Long Beach, California. And I spent the last 10 years of my career as an audit manager for the Office of Inspector General that had oversight over the Postal Service. What I was doing is I was editing and writing countless reports about inefficiencies at the post office. So there's a lot of material there.
You know, actually, that's a great...
I know where the bodies are buried.
Yeah. Under what sack of mail?
You know, that is a great career path, you know, from what you said from your very beginning. You talk about, you know, all those movies, Hollywood movies,
they talk
about starting in the mail room and working themselves to the top. It's a little bit what you did.
Well,
so
my favorite mail scene in a movie is from Miracle on 34th Street, the original one, and when they get that great idea. And all those guys, you know, working the deadline, and they come in with those sacks of mail. And I think I thought I was maybe five. That movie actually had a huge impact on me all of my life. And I might have been five or six first time I saw it. And I almost thought, like, oh, that might be really fun to work in the mail, you know, work in the post office.
Well, it can be pretty boring. I mean, it's pretty repetitive work, but,
Yeah. So this story, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, starts in a particular time in the 1990s. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in those first couple of pages. Or did you want, we also were hoping you might read something.
Sure. I can tell you a little about what's going on.
Okay, perfect.
So the novel starts on June 17th, 1994. And if you're of a certain age, you might remember that was the night of the O.J. Simpson slow speed chase through Los Angeles, Southern California.
A run for it. Yeah.
I always feel like I have to say at this point that my novel is not about O.J. Simpson. It's not about whether he was guilty or innocent. It's simply about a family that's living through this time. So it's the Lockhart family who happens to be on the freeway that night going to a party. That's the night that Brenda Lockhart's marriage falls apart. And kind of, she sits down on the couch and starts watching the trial instead of dealing with all the changes that she needs to be dealing with, to the detriment of her two teenage daughters that are making their own bad decisions. Mm-hmm. So I like to say it's about divorce, regrets, and bad decisions with the Simpson trial as background noise.
Yeah. That's a perfect description. And then if you have your own memories of it, your memory kind of fills in whether your memory is right or not, you know, sort of fills it in as you go. And Brenda mentioned that one of the three women, what are the names of the three women?
Brenda Lockhart's the mother. The oldest daughter is Peggy and the youngest daughter is Allison.
Allison. Yeah. And Brenda will say with great status that, you know, when Simpson went by, you know, they had a moment where they had some eye contact. And then she remembered having served him in a restaurant or been a hostess in a restaurant many years before. And I think that's really telling. That's a neat little moment that I don't know if you decided to put that in there or Brenda just told you that
Brenda
happened.
Brenda told me all about that. Because Brenda was absolutely convinced that he remembers her. Yeah. Even though it's been 20 years. Because
that is kind of a thing about being anywhere that there are famous people. And it doesn't just happen in LA, you know, but you rub shoulders, you're in line, you know, to get coffee and Dustin Hoffman is in front of you or you see some, you know, it's kind of one of those sort of odd things that goes on. And so it didn't seem at all odd to me that Brenda would remember that moment, even though it was, you know, back there. Because you hear people say, oh yes, I remember when I waited on so-and-so, you know?
And Brenda wasn't the only person that got hooked on that trial. I mean, it was, even if you didn't want to watch it, it was inescapable.
It was.
I mean, the cameras were in the courtroom the whole time, which meant that soap operas and cartoon shows were, you know, preempted. So it was really inescapable. If you were like me and working during the day, when you came home from work, you got to relive the whole thing because that's what they showed on the news.
Right.
But, you know, in those days, we didn't have Google or Facebook. We had television. And that was what we got addicted to. That was our social media addiction.
And I remember not necessarily being interested, but I worked in a retail kind of situation with people with different shifts. And so whoever was watching in the morning, you know, often was running, you know, almost running in almost late and then couldn't wait to, you know, to tell everybody. So like you say, whether you wanted to know or not.
Yeah.
You know, you were getting it. Do you want to read a little something?
Sure.
Great. Yeah.
I'll just read a paragraph. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
There is an entire day ahead with no one to talk to. Brenda washes the palm fronds in the tree next door, shudder in the devil Santa Ana winds. Her skin feels as dry as sandpaper. She removes her rings and lotions her hands and arms. She's going to have to stop wearing the wedding band and engagement ring eventually. She could use the diamonds for something else, earrings maybe, or a necklace. She takes one of the Tiffany glasses from the China hutch, turns on the TV, pours a glass of Chardonnay, and sits down on the couch. Look at me, she thinks. Day drinking, and it's not even a holiday. That good-looking detective, Mark Furman, is on the screen now, very earnest in his fitted blue suit and bright red tie. But she doesn't believe a word he says. Johnny Cochran has convinced her he's lying. She prefers OJ's devoted and even more handsome friend, Robert Kardashian, anyway. Thank God she has all of them to distract her.
That was a good passage.
And
I
that
remember
is
that.
The author. How fun to hear the author, the author's own voice as Brenda sharing from the Lockhart women. And you do, as we heard, it is written in the first person. It's written in the, like, it's happening right as we're watching. Why did you choose to write in the first person?
I like present tense a lot. This is actually in a really close third person, but I like to put the reader right inside the character's head. So you feel like you're looking through her eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like first person. I mean, I like present tense because it just feels so immediate to me.
We have an author friend we had on a couple weeks ago who's also a screenwriter, and he writes everything in the present tense. And he said, well, I'm thinking about my friends that might want to pick up the script and make a movie. And when you make a movie, they're not talking in the past tense. It's, exactly. You know, it's all like happening. It doesn't matter what year it's in. It's happening.
Well, I would love to have a Netflix series made out of the Lockhart.
I think that's possible.
Well, it's got some basic subject matter.
Absolutely.
Why don't you tell us about those girls?
Wait a minute. We're gonna take a quick break so that our listeners can see where they can pick up this book. And when we come back, we're going to talk in greater depth about the Lockhart women. We'll be right back after this word from Out West Shop's affiliate bookshop page. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with special guests. Special guest, Barry Camarillo.
And the Lockhart women, who we're going to talk about a little bit more now.
They're with us now, too, aren't they?
Let's talk about those girls.
Let's
talk about the girls.
So, Brenda, we've talked a little bit about her. Tell us a little bit more about Brenda and also maybe how she came to life for you.
I actually started writing some stories about Allison. And then Brenda just introduced herself and said, you need to hear my story first. She kind of took over. She kind of nudged the girls out of the way and said, you know, I want to be center stage. And Brenda's like that. Yeah. She's very opinionated. She's very confident in her looks anyway. That's where Brenda thinks all her power comes from, is her looks. It takes her a long time to realize that, you know, she's got a lot more value. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one way. I mean, I can be very opinionated and judgmental myself. That's where I'm kind of like Brenda, but that's not the path that I took as far as, you know, using my looks to trade. I realized I had to support myself, where Brenda puts all of her eggs in Frank's basket. Feels like she's probably made the wrong choice because he's not rich and famous enough, and she's entitled to more and has settled for less.
Mm-hmm. And she was a stay-at-home mom. Yeah, and so her husband, Frank, when he makes the decision to leave, and that happens early on, so it's not really a spoiler alert, but she's really not prepared. She's not prepared.
Yeah.
And she's kind of an outlier. Even back in the 90s, I think most families needed two incomes. Mm-hmm. There was kind of a dip in real estate values at that time, and they could just barely afford to buy this house, but they really couldn't afford it on one income.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's put the family in some kind of financial jeopardy. And
well, I remember when I read that passage you read aloud as a reader, and she was thinking about the diamonds and another use, and I'm already thinking, oh yeah, she may need the money from those diamonds, to take care of some immediate expenses or pay for the attorney for the divorce or whatever. And she goes on to think, well, maybe in earrings or, you know, a necklace. And I was like, what world are you living in, Brenda?
Luckily for Brenda, she's got a really practical daughter in Peggy, because Peggy's like, okay, we got to sell the house, Mom. We better start packing things up. We need to clean the toilet. Come on, let's get moving, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Peggy's a little bit like me, maybe a lot like me. We have kind of a similar career path. She went to work at the post office, went to school at night. Like me, we have the same hobby of second-guessing ourselves and overthinking everything.
As a hobby. Oh, okay.
Peggy made some decisions, though, that I wish that she wouldn't have made, and I was sorry to see some things happen to her, but Peggy's a strong, resilient character.
Mm-hmm. She rebounded pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about the wild one, Allison?
The wild one.
I like how you called her wild as the wind.
Yes, wild as the wind. You like did. That. You did call Allison wild as the wind.
I think that was me one moment of my life a long time ago. I think I was wild as the wind as well. I always wanted to be a redhead like my younger brother. So I made Allison a redhead. I always wanted to be taller, so I made her tall.
Yeah.
Allison's convinced herself that Peggy's the smart sister, and she just became the pretty sister, although she doesn't really think of herself as that pretty for a long time. She kind of comes into her own as a senior in high school. But suddenly she's attracted the attention of this golden hair surfer boy, and she almost can't believe it, because she's kind of convinced herself that nobody really expects anything from her. So she doesn't expect that much from herself.
Yeah, that was a little not heartbreaking as a reader, but I wanted to shake her and say, Allison, you're so much more than that. And you should expect more from yourself than what the people around you. But I also can I'm probably more like Peggy. So I always probably wanted to be an Allison.
For a day, maybe.
Yeah.
She doesn't have the greatest role model in her mother. I mean, her mother kind of thinks the same thing. You just need to find yourself a man. Yeah. And, you know,
yeah,
your life is set, but you better find the right one.
Yeah. And she doesn't like Kevin. True. Yeah, Brenda doesn't really like Kevin.
And Kevin's a very damaged young man. I mean, on the surface,
he's
got everything going. Allison's father loves Kevin because he's a star athlete. He's a surfer. He's a football player. He plays baseball. He plays basketball. Everyone likes him. He's good looking. But he's got a lot of damage in his life. Mm-hmm. His parents are drug dealers. That's kind of a spoiler alert, but it doesn't take you long to figure that out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. I really liked Tim. And I felt like Tim, and I wondered if Tim also just kind of announced himself to you, or whether you felt a need kind of for a character that does the things that Tim does. But I enjoyed any of the scenes with him. Tell us a little bit about Tim.
Tim, the cousin, right? The one that's selling.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's selling something that's kind of similar to Herbalife. Tim's always got a scheme going on, yeah. But he's got a really good heart. And he is one person that Brenda had his back when he was a little kid. And so he feels like he needs to speak truth to her.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't accept it very well.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Frank? Now, Frank's a father. He's a husband. Who
a lot of people told me that there's not a lot of good men in this book. I think there's a couple that have good qualities, but Frank's kind of tired of being married to Brenda.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really forgive him for abandoning his family, but I kind of understand why he's ready to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Frank comes around at the end, but yeah, he's a frustrating person. He's kind of proud of himself for being a manager at the post office. I think he's got a little ego in that. He thinks it's great. His Peggy can go to community college and she'll be fine. And Allison, she's got a good boyfriend, so they're fine. So he can move on and find a new love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not an admirable man there, I don't think.
Yeah, the Brenda has a habit of saying a couple of things about her daughters, and they know what she says. To one, she says, they kind of grow up knowing one of them was unexpected, I think, and one was a surprise, or the other
one's
way
an accident, one's a surprise.
And surprise. And, you know, that I think too about Brenda. Does she have any idea how that could impact the kids to hear her say that?
I don't think she does, because she's at a point in her life. She's almost 40. She's gotten married really young. She's had children really young, and she's feeling like she's missed out. And it's kind of the kid's fault.
Mm-hmm. And that's how she plays it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not the truth anyway, because she wanted those girls.
Yeah, it's true. She did.
She wanted the girls more really than she wanted Frank.
More than she wanted Frank.
It takes her a while to figure this stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. In the development of the story, would you say that plot came to mind, or characters came to mind, or which got the more of your attention? Is it character driven or plot driven?
I would say it's character driven. I always think I kind of suck at plot.
Yeah.
I like to start with a character and just see what kind of trouble they're going to get into, and it's. That was pretty easy with Brenda, because she can get herself in trouble with just, you know, going to an aerobics class.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And the characters, there's one that lives all the way out. We were chatting about this, all the way out in Norco, which is a little bit of a distance to come to work from Norco. And his name is Glenn. Any comments about Glenn?
Glenn is based on people that I knew at the post office that were kind of Romeos, maybe a little bit past their time, you know, that's kind of worked their way through all the single women. Some of the married women.
Yes, except perhaps some of the married ones too. Yeah. You always seem to have a woman that had a house, you know. I don't know how you ever work this kind of deal. I don't know the way you paid rent. He's always staying someplace.
He actually, living out in Norco is probably a better financial decision than trying to live in Huntington Beach. On the income,
I'm sure.
What would you say as you traveled through this time with these characters? Did you anticipate how they might develop as you went all along together? The book has it ends in 2008. Mm-hmm. We're not with them through all of those years. But I did enjoy how we get to see the characters years later. I think if it's a Netflix series, it'll be very interesting to cover those other years. you might want to be working on some backstories for what happens.
they are
interesting characters.
it was kind of helpful for me to scaffold this around the Simpson trials. You know, there's three trials. And the majority of this book is on the criminal trial, you know, kind of tracing that trajectory. Yeah, but then I liked being able to move the characters forward just a little bit in time, because they're not always likable. They make such terrible decisions. There's got to be hope at the end of it, right?
Right. They're real people. You talked about real people working real jobs in Southern California, and you do fill the book with it's not data dump, but it's all kinds of wonderful little things where we kind of go like, oh yeah, what about we all had Franklin planners, or I always wanted St. John knits. Oh my gosh, I wanted a wardrobe of them. Or, you know, you give us the time period and what's going on without feeling like it's overly done. But if we've lived through that time, especially in California, it feels very home. It feels very comfortable.
I have to give a shout out to the LA Times online daily newspapers, because I went back and like read the newspaper from 1994 through 1995, just because it was really important for me to get the weather and music and the clothes right.
Yeah.
If you get one of those details wrong, the reader's just thrown out of the story.
Right. That's right.
This writer doesn't know what she's talking about. You know,
yeah, it's those details. And that's what does bring authenticity to a story. Absolutely. We're going to take another very short break. We're going to hear about from our sponsor, Out West Shop. And when we come back, we're going to talk about writing tips and writing process. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. A special guest, Mary Camarillo.
Okay, I'm going to hold it over this way now. Okay. This way. Over by Mary.
You know, we've been talking about characters and character development storyline. We want to talk a little bit about process and
which
research.
Which you just started to talk a little bit about. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was very smart reading the paper. Were there other things, especially since you had kind of lived through it yourself, were there other things that you decided not to just rely on your own memory that you needed to go and just verify?
I read a bunch of, it seems like everyone involved in those trials wrote a book, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Everybody wrote a book. So I would give a shout out to the Huntington Beach Library. I would go to their use section and just anything about OJ, I would buy. I even bought his book for 25 cents. And I had to put up with the librarian's horrified expression, like, why are you buying this book? But yeah, are you guys still there? You're frozen. Are we frozen? Maybe a little bit. I'll just keep talking.
Yes. Yeah, just keep talking. We're here. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so libraries are a great resource. So I read all the attorneys' books, Marcia Clark's book. There's that great Netflix that was written by Jeffrey Toomer, the... Mm-hmm. Who had some unfortunate experiences during the pandemic, but yeah, mm-hmm. so there's a ton of books that I relied on. I'm sure I made some mistakes. Those are my mistakes, but I wanted to get it as accurate as possible.
Mm-hmm. No, it's mm-hmm. good.
Mm-hmm. I really haven't spent a lot of time looking at his path on the freeway, because I really wanted, in my mind, he had gone by Disneyland. And I thought, yeah, I want somebody at Disneyland to be looking at him go by, but he didn't go that way. So,
and all the helicopters that were, you know, in the air,
You know, there's a drug theme in the story. Did you do some research on that?
On the drug theme?
Yeah.
Kevin's family is actually based on a group called the. Oh God, I want to get the name right. The Fellowship, the Brotherhood of Eternal Love, And this was a group of surfers and hippies back in the 60s who became the largest distributor of LSD in the world.
Oh my goodness.
And Timothy Leary was part of it. It was broken up. A lot of people went to jail, but not everybody. Not everybody went to jail. There's still some people out there in Hawaii, you know, undercover, that are, you know, that are related to that that brotherhood. So
interesting,
loosely based on that family.
Okay.
Well, and there's we have Peggy at the post office, and she's pretty smart and very aware of things. And she starts to see some envelopes repeatedly. Yeah. And I wondered if in your experience at the post office, had you personally seen something like that, or you just heard, you knew about cases like that?
Well, when I was working in mail processing, we would always, you know, joke about, yeah, we'd hope that like a bag of weed would fall out of a box or something. That actually never happened to me. One time somebody's remains broke open on the belt, and that was dreadful.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some financials. There were some financial problems at the post office for a while, the loose controls that got tightened up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was aware of those because I worked in the accounting office. So some of the things in the book about the graft and, you know, the stealing and hiding money orders and stuff, that's based on real things that really happened. Okay. Went to jail for that.
Yeah.
So when did you start? How long did it take you to write this book?
It took me about 7 years.
Okay. 7 years, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that was, revising it after it was accepted by She Writes, because I did a ton of editing after they accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, the book was way too long at first. It was like 106,000 words. I trimmed it down to like 93,000. It's still a good chunk of a book.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was way too long when I was first trying to shop it around.
Okay. And were you working on any other projects at the same time, or this was really the writing project that took your full attention?
That took my full attention. It started off as short stories, then it became a novel, went through a lot of iterations. Mm-hmm. I get stuck once in a while, so I think I'll try to write a poem.
Write something else.
Yeah, to do something different. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to have a couple good questions for her about the process?
One we ask on occasion is, what's the greatest investment you've made in your writing career?
I think going to the community of writers in the High Sierras. I went there about 7 years ago. It was like a week, intense week. It's at a ski lodge up in the Sierras at the Olympic Village.
Oh,
yeah, they don't have any air conditioning. It was like 105 degrees.
Oh my gosh.
It was like hot yoga. It was like hot writing workshop. But it was incredible because I went in there thinking, oh yeah, I got accepted. I know what I'm doing. And I got really cut down, which was good for me because, a writer that I really respect told me, this is Brenda's story. You're like focusing on the wrong character. And then I also learned that I really needed to take myself more seriously. Like I came home and told my husband, I'm getting my own office. We're not sharing an office anymore. I want a place where I can go and close the door because I need to be more serious about this.
Yeah.
So that was really good. Plus I met wonderful people there that I'm still friends with that have been very helpful.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. So good. When you write, is it in that office? Do you have a favorite place you like to write?
I work in my office. Yeah.
Do you have music on or anything? No, you need the quiet.
Are you in the office now?
I am.
To see the office. Yeah. Let's see. Do you have...
It's the neat part of the office. You don't see all the stacks all around.
I understand. You wouldn't want to see what this camera is not picking up in this space that we're in. Do you have a tip or two for a new writer or a writer that maybe is struggling a little bit?
Sure. I think it's really important to join a writing group and have someone read your work and read your work out loud to them and see how it sounds. I think it's also important to learn that you need to trust your own voice and maybe not always listen to what the writing group tells you. Because you can't write a book by committee. And in a writing group, you'll get, five people say they like something and six say they don't. And one person thinks you should, set it in Illinois. And another one says, you should make her blonde, and you know, you have to trust your own voice.
Yes, yes.
And then another thing I've learned is that you shouldn't be afraid to revise, because you can't screw it up. All you can do is you have to do it over again. But I think editing is really my favorite part. I like to get things down really fast and then just go back. I tend to way overwrite. There's like another whole book that I cut out of the Lockhart Women, because I overwrite everything. But yeah, cutting and honing it down and making it more crystal clear, that's my favorite part.
Do you have another question?
What's next? I know we got a new book coming out here,
book coming out. It's called Those People Behind Us. And I haven't actually shared the cover, although you can pre-order it now. It's available for pre-order wherever you like to buy books. But it's a different story. It's not the Lockhart Women. It's set in an affluent suburban California coastal neighborhood in 2017, the summer of 2017. So it's post-Trump's election, pre-pandemic, which honestly feels to me like historical fiction now.
I know. It's true.
So long ago. But there's five neighbors, and they're all dealing with grief and loneliness and financial problems and trying to raise teenagers and trying to take care of their elders. And it's about trying to find a community in a neighborhood where nobody can really agree who belongs there.
Wow. So I hope that you'll send us an advanced copy when it's ready.
I would love to. I'm hoping to have advanced copies, hopefully by May.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. Lockhart Women won a number of awards. How did that feel when you learned about the first one?
Oh my goodness. I was so excited. I was just, yeah. And it turned out to be I won Next Generation Indie Award for first fiction. And it turned out that award came with this giant medal.
Oh, wow.
It was so cool. I mean, it's not like I could walk around wearing this giant medal, but it was so exciting. That was really a thrill.
Wow. I can't believe I'm looking at the clock. Mary, we're at 48 minutes.
Oh, cool.
So this has been so fun. Quickly tell people how they can find you.
I have a great website, marycamarillo.com.
This has been delightful. Don't go away. Stay with us till the end. Next week, another award-winning author joins us. Oh, I'll have to practice getting that in the camera. Blind Eye by Martha Burns. We're delighted to have her joining us next week. Jim, you have a quote you want to share?
Quotes, yes, we do.
Okay, we have like 1 minute.
Let's get with it. We have two, actually. And I know one that kind of starts us off in the book. And this is from Mother Blues, a song by musician Ray Wiley Hubbard. And he says, "And the days that I keep my gratitude higher than my expectations, well, I have really good days."
Yes.
Makes sense.
All right. Do you have another one quickly?
This is interesting. This is sometimes called the postman's motto. You know, it's originally written by a Greek historian by the name of Herodotus.
Herodotus.
Back about 2,500 years before Christ. And he says, "Neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these courageous couriers in the swift completion of their appointed rounds."
Who knew that it had that much history to that? Well, on behalf of the two of us, we thank you so much, Mary, for being with us tonight. And for all of you that have come along, we'll be back next week, same time, same station. Boy. Until then,
it's always
a great day out west. Bye-bye. See you next time.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.